Want access to search and listen to the entire webmasterradio.fm archive of over 1,500 podcasts commercial-free? Just become a webmasterradio.fm elite member for less than 99 cents a day. Otherwise, the last 60 days of content are on the house. Webmasterradio.fm. We're everywhere.
Are your domains working hard enough for you? Now, park your portfolio at RevenueDirect.com to maximize your earnings on traffic. With RevenueDirect's proven domain monetization service, you'll experience better payouts, more options, and smart optimization. Sign up free now at RevenueDirect.com. It's that easy. RevenueDirect. Make more money. Period.
Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better. It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Welcome your hosts, Byron White and Amanda Smith.
Welcome everyone to today's show. Mandy, how are you?
I'm great as usual.
How was the show last week? I missed it.
It was so lonely, Byron. It was horribly lonely. I felt like I was just talking to myself, like I was talking to like dead air. Please don't ever leave me again.
Well, thanks for the compliments, and I'm sure everything was smooth and fine, and it was a breath of fresh air to just have your lovely voice being broadcast out to all of our fans. But hey, we're in the backyard here of the Boston Garden. How about those Celtics?
Oh my God, the whole city was so excited last night. I mean, honestly, there's nothing that you can't say about how excited the Boston fans get. I mean, they love their teams.
It's fun to have gone. Yeah, there's the crowd roaring
in the
background.
Right now, they're outside.
Thanks, George at WebmasterRadio.fm for that sound effect. Really appreciate it. But we are blessed with literally a view of the big gold sort of statue that's right out in front of the garden. We felt the vibe yesterday afternoon of everybody, you know, the excitement being generated around the game at the end of the day, the work day, and people pouring in, the tents that were set up. I mean, it's pretty special to be from Boston now, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think we're really lucky, especially because our office, our station, is located right across from where the Celtics play. So, I mean, we get a bird's eye view of everything that's going on over there. And I know the Boston fans get a little too excited sometimes about their teams. Not that that's a bad thing. But from what I hear last night, everybody was pretty well behaved. Everything was under control. And everybody was just a healthy level of excitement.
I saw some of the footage. There was definitely some. The streets were roughed up. They were not too badly, but there was your normal vandalism. Some cars were beat up a bit. I think the Boston Globe delivery little metal vehicles took the worst beating. They were flattened and crushed with newspapers all over the place. It's pretty embarrassing when these types of things happen, but. From a media perspective, as we're sitting here documenting what transpired, you know, those are the stories, unfortunately, that you have to talk about. You know, what happened in the city? Was it crazy? Was it nuts? And it seemed like it was pretty crazy.
It was pretty crazy, yeah. I woke up this morning. I mean, I fell asleep. I'm such an old lady. I can't stay up. I think the game was going till 1:30 in the morning last night. And I woke up this morning, and all the local coverage was, you know, how exciting the game was and how the crowds were afterward. And it's so exciting to see all those people running out of the stadium with, you know, so much, you know, excitement. They're just so happy to be a part of a winning town.
You know, we have an interesting guest on, just to switch gears for a second. We have to figure out a way to find some positive news about the challenges of living green and the global warming issues. We're blessed with a guest today that is going to be really exciting to learn more about. He's a scientific journalist, as you've noted in your fabulous write-up here. Mandy, thank you very much. He began worldviewofglobalwarming.org. The website itself, not just to tell people, but to show people the changes of the Earth is experiencing. So we're going to talk about it. But, you know, I got to tell you, it is a depressing subject, you know.
Yeah.
To see these images is really staggering. And we have to try to figure out what positive things can come out of our education, and certainly moving beyond denial that who cares, let's just buy those SUVs and, you know, not worry about our carbon footprint and live for today and not for 20 years from now. But there must be something positive we can do. So let's try to dig in and find something positive from today. What do you say? That's your job.
I like it. I'll be Captain Positivity over here.
Great. Well, let's take a break, and then we'll be back with our guest, Gary Brosh, a scientific photojournalist for worldviewofglobalwarming.org. Back in a minute, everybody.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
Susan, you're still responsible for digital marketing programs, right?
Right.
So your team is responsible for email marketing, web analytics, PPC campaign optimization, and scheduling?
Your point?
Why are you so relaxed? My team deals with 5 different solutions, tech support teams, and just as many invoices, and it's making us mental. What is it? Aromatherapy? Acupuncture? Why are you so relaxed?
You just have to simplify your tool set and unify your team. Lyris provides totally integrated email marketing, web analytics, PPC campaign management, and calendaring functionality. It's all in one spot that provides a holistic view of all your team's efforts. And you get all of this functionality for $299 a month.
So with Lyris, one company can do it all. Huh. I feel like I can cancel that acupuncture appointment already.
To see how Lyris can simplify your life, visit Lyris.com or call 1-888-GO-LYRIS. Simplify, unify, and increase ROI with Lyris today.
A rose by any other name would still be the same.
Move over, Shakespeare. You need to differentiate yourself from your competition. Do it by aligning yourself with a company who has earned the trust of Jupiter Media, the NHL, and Lionsgate Films, among others. Moniker.com is the most secure ICANN-accredited register on the planet, offering you domain registration, hosting, domain sales, and acquisition services. Wrap that up with 24/7 support. That's your winning combination. MONIKER.com. More than a name.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back, everybody, to the show. We're here today with Gary Brosh. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much. I have to say, as a Western Conference guy, I'm quite impressed by the Celtics.
Well, if nothing else, you have to... Thank you for the compliment. If nothing else, you have to be impressed with the emotion that you saw at the end of the game last night. Wow.
Yeah, I wonder if people at a game who do some damage afterwards, is that vandalism?
Yeah. Whatever it is, it always gets talked about. We're a rough crowd, but let's talk about more important things. Let's jump to more important things, like making the world a better place thanks to the great work you've done here in the photojournalism area. Tell us a little bit about what you do and where you're going, and then I know Mandy's going to dig right in at you. She's got some things hot on her mind that she wants to learn from you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks. Well, I'm an environmental photojournalist. I have a background in journalism, not science, but I have been taking photographs and covering scientific work, especially natural history science, for about 30 years. My name may not be familiar, but my pictures have been in all the major magazines. And I began to notice global warming, as many other people did back in the 80s and 90s, but it wasn't until about toward the end of the 90s, when I was in Alaska, that I actually talked to scientists who were measuring the rapid temperature rise in Alaska, which is still going on, and starting to see effects on the tundra, wondering about how it would affect the major mammals up there, especially like the caribou and the polar bear. And on that particular trip, I also landed at Prudhoe Bay on my way out. There's an airport there connecting down to the lower 48. And immediately, you know, the very strong connection between fossil fuels and climate, and the fact that, you know, gas that was being produced right there in Prudhoe Bay was going to vehicles and industries elsewhere, and they were putting out CO2, and it was coming back to affect the caribou that were in a wilderness only about 150 miles away, really sort of connected it all up for me. And I also saw there weren't that many photographs of what the scientists were actually doing and the places where the effects were actually starting to be seen. So I didn't know really what I was getting into. It's turned into an incredible, massive job. And, of course, the science has gotten increasingly more, as they call it, very robust, very, very, very positive results about how strong global warming is beginning to happen. So with the photographs, I began to put them out into the marketplace and the magazines that I knew, and I got some assignments, and I raised money on my own, and ended up going to 22 nations on all seven continents to track where scientists were working and to track the effects of ongoing climate change right now.
Now, Gary, you've literally traveled the entire world taking really awesome photojournalistic evidence of the global warming changes. But, and you know, I hate to be like a naysayer here, and I'm not, but what would you say to people who think that, you know, since the Earth has changed, the Earth has gone through so many different climate patterns in the past thousands of years, you know, what do you say to people who are like, oh, well, we're just going through another climate change. This is natural. This has nothing to do with what humans are doing.
Well, the scientific answer to that, and I'm sure, I understand that there are some people who can't understand this, and I mean, the Earth is a huge place, the ocean is a huge place. To think that us puny humans are actually having an effect on it is hard for some people to grasp. I understand that. But the science is very secure now. There's no question that extra CO2 in the atmosphere does warm the atmosphere. That is as close to being a fact as is the theory of gravity. the CO2 in the air can be measured, and they know for sure that the extra CO2 that's been put in the last 100 years is coming from ancient carbon from the fossil fuels. That's easily measured by a scientist. And they also, beyond just the temperature change that's happened, very, very rapid temperature change, especially in the last 30 years, very unusual in many, many, many thousands of years going into the past, there are indications now that every kind of part of the world that relies on climate and weather for how it grows and how it functions is beginning to change according to the change in temperature. That's everything from glaciers and ice sheets down to tiny birds and even the plankton in the ocean are all changing in correlation with this change in temperature and the change in CO2. What happened many, many millions of years ago on the planet, certainly there were warmer times, more CO2 times back way, way back, but it really is not relevant to what's happening now, because now we can see what's happening, we can see how fast it's happening, and we know for sure scientifically that almost all the effect is from what humans are doing.
Now, what are some of the most extreme examples of climate change that you've seen during your travels?
Well, I've seen it in several different ways. I mean, first of all, I have. It's hard to see climate change. Most of it doesn't happen fast enough that you can just stand there and notice it. But many people, for example, if they think about it, have experiences of going to our national parks, the ones that have glaciers, and noticing, especially if they went there as a young person and now they're a grandma or grandpa or something like that, they can look at the family pictures probably and see the change in glaciers. My own Mount Hood out here in Oregon near Portland is a glaciated dormant volcano, and scientifically measured changes there. The glaciers are definitely getting smaller. They're 35% smaller than they were a century ago. And I can actually see that in my photographs. The photographs I made on mountain climbs and on scenic photographs in the 1980s definitely show more snow, more ice at the end of the summer season than the pictures I take today. So I'm actually both learning it from the scientists as well as seeing it with my own eyes. Also, I might say the sea level is rising more rapidly now, and most places along the shore, especially sandy shores or gentle shores, are seeing effects of oncoming sea level rise, as well as the possibility of stronger storms. There's indication, for example, that the waves in the Pacific Ocean, on average, are larger now that is possibly tied, and they're still working on all this, but there are all these effects that are getting stronger, and the only thing that really is happening with our planet that's dramatic in terms of changes is the change in CO2. The sun is not stronger. The big cycle, the 10,000-year cycles and so forth that create ice ages actually would be making us cooler now, but we appear to have totally overcome that. So I am seeing these changes in my own landscapes, and of course through the eyes of the scientists, I'm being able to see things like the fact that the data shows that migrating birds are coming in earlier, that they're nesting earlier, that insects are changing their range, and other effects like that.
A couple questions for you that are probably have no answer that we can surmise at this juncture, but in the history of the planet, have we had phases of global cooling as well as global warming? Is there any evidence that might suggest that we're just in a global warming phase, but we may pull out of it and somehow find ourselves in a global cooling phase? Or is that just not something that there's any basis from which to imagine?
Well, actually, I'm just reading a book now by Dr. Wallace Broker, who is one of the premier geophysicists on the planet. He works for Lamont Doherty in New York. He is one of the ones that discovered how rapidly the changes happened at the end of the last ice age. He's one of the ones that discovered some of the cycles that happen that create the change in an ice-covered planet versus a much warmer planet. And he definitely sees these changes. And one, there's two things that he's worried about. Number one, he, like most other scientists, is very concerned about the amount of CO2 in the air right now. Mm-hmm. That is a factor that we have not. We can measure the CO2 in ice cores and deep glaciers. Mm-hmm. We can measure the CO2 actually that was in the air 800,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. And there has been no point in all that time when the CO2 has been as high as it is now. Mm-hmm. So that's one warning sign that he keeps going back to in his book. And the other one is that the cycles that he knows about from the cosmical ice ages are relatively weak compared to the amount of warming of the CO2. He thinks that there's the possibility of even more rapid changes that we've seen, just because when you push the Earth system, when you stress it, which is what happened at the end of the ice age, it started to get the natural warming started to happen. Mm-hmm. Things can happen very rapidly. So there is evidence of cooling and evidence of warming in the past, but what we're seeing now seems to be mostly driven by human CO2. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I might also methane, of course, also is in there in the mix also in terms of the greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. So the big issue here is the Earth is working the way it normally works. That is, it responds to additional CO2. It responds to changes of its orbit. Right now, the major factor that is responding to is the additional CO2, and scientists know a lot about what to expect. That's why they can put out predictions that talk about how much sea level rise might be happening. You know, up to 3 feet of sea level rise by the end of the century is one of the estimates. They can talk about how the ranges of food plants, like where corn can grow and so forth, will change over time because they understand the relationship between habitat and climate. So they're not guessing about this. They are using what they know about plants and animals and the climate to see what might happen if we keep on the path that we're on.
Have you seen any breakthroughs or any plans that seem feasible to actually reduce the amount of CO2 in the environment that might involve really creative, innovative things? You know, laser beams poking holes in the ozone, you know.
Well,
anything, I mean, that is good news, positive news.
Well, actually, I mean, I think the good news is not just about big innovations that nobody's heard of yet, but also about the fact that things we already know about are absolutely work. I mean, to me, the best news, and this is something that people can participate in immediately after the program if they haven't already, and also involves much bigger entities and governments, but it's the fact that we waste half of our energy. In the United States especially, I've seen that chart showing that we waste half of the energy that we put into our system, industrial systems, into our houses, into our cars, etc. And in some businesses or industrial processes, like by the time you put your pedal down in a car, you know, you're getting not even 5% of the energy of the gasoline. And so we have a huge way to go in terms of using the techniques we already know about making machines and houses and buildings and our urban structure much more efficient. This is not it's not a huge breakthrough. We've known about these for many years, but because gasoline and oil and coal were so cheap, we didn't have to do it. Now not only is gasoline and oil getting very, very expensive, but we now have a whole other reason to be concerned about the CO2, which was an invisible output of all of this burning that we didn't even notice. We don't notice it. But now we have another reason to take these really relatively easy steps. And it's not going to be happen tomorrow. But I mean, if everybody looked at their travel methods, and if they're not already taking public transportation, if they're using a car, if they can save, you know, 10 or 20 or 50 miles off of what they drive in a day or a week, it absolutely will make a difference. Every time you burn a gallon of gasoline, you put 20 pounds of CO2 in the air. So what's been described to me is not only the low-hanging fruit, but the fruit that's already on the ground in terms of what we all should be doing. And people in governments and industries are starting to get the idea. So that's, I mean, that's the first thing I would say. But also there are some other ideas, and one of them has to do with, I think, that has not been really fully, that will amount to a lot of energy, and that is ocean currents and ocean waves is something that's just beginning to be explored. And another one that Dr. Broeker talks about in his book is techniques where we can actually take CO2 out of the air and convert it into a mineral that could be useful in other ways. And there's also the possibility of finding a way to make hydrogen without using fossil fuels, maybe solar-powered hydrogen plants that would give us a way to carry energy in the hydrogen. These are coming, and I think the pressure on the whole industrial system and on governments will move a lot of money in those directions and get this going. But in the meantime, the savings from efficiencies and conservation are just huge that we haven't taken advantage of yet.
Gary, you're killing me. This is such a downer interview. I want to crawl into my desk and hide.
People ask me if I'm hopeful, and I say I think it's more like I'm determined. I mean, I see that we can, the changes that we made, especially in the United States and Europe since, you know, in the last 100 years, even since the Great War, we have done all these things because we had the power to do it and because people were interested in inventing things and making money in the marketplace. And those still apply. We just have a whole other reason why we should let our inventors and our engineers loose on these non-carbon techniques.
Well, it's hopeful.